Do you lead an organization, a business, a company, a nonprofit? Imagine if your people delivered truly inspired performance day in and day out. Well, it can happen. The challenge lies in knowing what motivates your people. That's where SEMA International comes in. They unlock the mystery and the magic of human motivation. To learn more, visit SEMAInternational.com. S-I-M-A International. For 50 years, they're experts in retain search, talent management, and personalized coaching. Check out SEMAInternational.com. Good morning again here on Circles of Change, and it's always a pleasure to welcome my partner in the change crime, particularly the job fit environment, and that would be Marlis Hansen from SEMA International. How are you this morning, Marlis?
I'm just fine. Thank you for calling.
You betcha. Well, for those who don't follow our show, as often as we do talk about this idea of helping individuals really understand deeply what their natural giftedness is, and in other words, their wiring, so that they and their supervisors can find the best fit opportunity. We wanted to kind of go with that subject, but in the context of how organizations, certainly in this period of the evolution of the economy, right, Marlis, have changed in this whole idea of the push for productivity.
It's really quite dramatic, and we're just hearing more and more from clients, you know, sort of more talk on the street, if you will, about how things are very different in terms of the expectation for performance.
Yes, and in fact, it is the new normal now, is it not? In fact,
yes.
The articles out there that are calling it the speed up.
That's right, and speeding up meaning the increased expectations for every employee. You know, it used to be these speed ups related to production lines, and when, you know, the number per hour or whatever was upped and all the different measurements were increased, they would call it the speed up. But now this is all white collar kind of speed up as well. I mean, there seems to be kind of no area that's safe, from the push for productivity.
Well, in particular, so that what that means for people entering a company for the first time, or even individuals within a company that are switching departments, know that you're not going to get cut too much slack, right? You're going to be potentially thrown right into the firing line or the fire hose.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking at it from the new hire, for example, I'm thinking of a young nurse I met when I was back in New York for a wedding here a few weeks ago. Just graduated, just had her, got her degree and went to work. And she was absolutely astounded at the nature of the responsibilities that just kept increasing day after day, and little access to a supervisor because the supervisor had so many direct reports. They just, you know, she didn't ever get time to give her the kind of instructions or mentoring that she needed, and she was really in a bit of a panic, and you know, said that the only thing that she could think of doing was to do some planking. And I don't know if you've heard about planking.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Go ahead, explain it.
Means just lying down on the job, basically, or lying down anywhere, and staying there in the prone until you get some attention. And it's being done for different reasons, but it is being done for on the job for, you know, people to just bring attention to things that are taking place. And so it's quite a phenomena, and it's powerful and it's prevalent.
Well, and I think what happens then in the fallout of that kind of a situation is if you are not well equipped to step into that job, whether that be if you'd had previous internships, or in her case as a nursing student, if she'd had sufficient practicums. But nonetheless, there's an awful lot that doesn't happen in college degree or certificate-based programs, right?
That's right.
The rubber doesn't hit the road until you really get in the car, so to speak. And as much as these programs try to accelerate some real-world experience, not until you get there do you realize what you're into.
Well, and we're, I think as a society, we're sort of used to thinking there will be an orientation period.
Right.
That you'll probably have a buddy to help you through, you know, these kinds of things, that there will be a mentor, that your supervisor will have time to work with you. You know, just a whole lot of time to get your feet on the ground and get going, when in reality, it's becoming more of a sink or swim situation, and a person either makes it or very quickly, if they're not making it, they're put into a performance improvement program, and we all know that's kind of the first step for out the door.
Well, and you know, and some of this phenomenon, of course, equally applies to people who are in mid-career scenarios that are making a big shift or taking that big promotion, that suddenly this idea that you can even, in some regards, scope your job so it's you can handle it, this part of this productivity and speed up also involves the consolidation of roles.
And in a way, the mid-career, you know, the people who have some experience and are there already performing on the job, they're almost getting even a broader brunt, I think, of it, because there's just a number of things that come into play, because their supervisors, of course, having more work themselves, tend to delegate more of their responsibilities to their direct reports. And of course, these mid-careers, they're people who already know the ropes and, you know and are able to perform, so it just keeps coming.
So in some ways, that's a good news thing, and from the standpoint of you being able to demonstrate what your capability is, provided you're equipped, right?
Right. Provided you're something that you really want to do, and that it doesn't get to a point where it's just really overdone. And we know that there are some new terms out there that are kind of bubbling up to describe the situation. One of them is offloading. That's a word to describe cutting jobs and dumping the work onto the remaining staff.
You bet,
So you offload that work onto someone else. And then a new term called super job, which is kind of a nifty euphemism for, employees that are doing more than one job's worth of work. So, you know, just a whole number of things that seem to be very much present, and we're hearing more and more about burnout in the mid-career folks. And burnout, you know, is more than just boredom or, disengagement or whatever. Burnout is serious, and it is more, invasive in terms of psychological health.
Yes, exactly.
It's really quite a serious problem. So,
right, it leads to fatigue. It can be depression. It can be, alcohol or substance abuse to maintain. It's inability to sleep then. So people are taking, sleeping assists, pharmacology that really then gets in that spiral.
So, this push is hard on the new people coming in, but certainly the ones that have been around for a while are getting their share of it. And then a whole number of, I think, individuals who are really, really being impacted by their jobs being really disappearing.
Sure, exactly.
And these are people who are being forced then to reinvent themselves, as they say, and find, totally new roles. And then, of course, they're in another kind of a crunch when they're trying to be super productive, and they're just learning a new skill. So there's really a lot of consequences of this push for productivity that maybe the employers have not thought through totally.
Well, and particularly if there's a boomerang effect on people that were previously star performers that then fall into that abyss. Well, so Marlis, I'm sure our listeners are saying, gee, will you two get on to what the strategies are now to help? Because there are absolutely clear ways to do it, and there's ways to be really opportunistic right now in your career planning, even amidst this type of shifting.
And one of the consequences of all these things that we've talked about, that even in this tight employment market, where it's really the employer's market, in terms of hiring, that we're seeing and hearing, in fact, I just talked to a client this afternoon about it, more of a revolving door kind of thing growing, especially with the truly talented employee.
Mm-hmm.
That they're reaching a point, that they're just saying, well, I can't do this anymore, and I'm looking for something else. And given, a good performance track record, they're able to find that even in a tight employment situation.
You bet. Well, we've talked several times on the show about the Gallup study that just completed, in fact, that says something like, what, 54% of employees are not engaged. In fact, that term, they're sleepwalking through their day. They don't have the ability to put their passion into work. I mean, if that number isn't striking enough, it's the other statistic, right? It's that 17%.
Right. Are actively disengaged.
So there's the, you know, they're planking, they're doing whatever you want to call it, that really aren't getting things done.
And that's a 2011 Gallup study
that you're quoting from. Yeah.
And you know, those are some pretty powerful figures when you think of, even though there's this giant push for productivity, if totally nearly 70% of the employees are not fully engaged, that's a big loss.
It's a loss. It's another contributing then to this slipping into burnout, and certainly then not getting the chance to apply themselves, creatively, fulfillment, innovation, new ideas, and in some regards help that change sustain that organizations are otherwise needing to make.
Right. We're at a time where they really need the engagement of every employee. And we know that that only comes if the individual really is able to be, you know, doing work that really fits their talents.
So let's talk about that subject of fit now. This is really where we want to head.
And both employers and and employees really need to, you know, I think more fully appreciate the fact that the basic productivity comes from the fit, you know, equation. And it's getting the, you know, as Jim Collins said, you know, getting the right person in the right seat, is where it all begins and really where it all ends. I mean, if you don't have that, you don't ever achieve the kind of productivity or creativity that's required. And that's another, you know, major issue in terms of getting the breakthroughs in any field, whether it's medicine or auto mechanics or optometry or whatever it is. If the really creative kind of breakthroughs are to happen, they have to come from people who are doing work that they're truly engaged in, that they really have an appetite for, that they don't mind the doubling up in the sense if it gives them more of what they're really motivated to do.
Well, and then let's use that word offloading then in a positive sense, and that is to offload or move the work that doesn't fit them well and crowds out their ability to perform in that space that the company needs. And lo and behold, if you're smart about it, that which you offload from one person is actually what another can be passionate about doing.
So right.
Rebalancing the equation.
You know that if it's something you really love to do, you look at it as more of an opportunity than an extra task.
Right, right.
So... But it really requires, you know, insight and information, evidence, if you will, on part of both the employer and the employee to sit down and really look at what the employee brings to the party and how that fits with what the tasks are to be done. Because you just can't tell by looking around who's going to be, you know, the person to fit a certain kind of responsibility.
And in particular, you can't necessarily rely on what their past track record was, because even if they were successfully performing it, until you have a dialogue, you might find out it's been a living hell during the time they nonetheless were contributing.
Right, and we have really seen that, haven't we?
Constantly.
That individuals can be performing something very well, but still it's not something they're strongly motivated to do. Or sustain over a longer period of time, much less get more of it to do, right?
Well, and we know that countless times, the two of us, this opportunity we get to work inside organizations and really talk deeply between the employee and the supervisor about their fit, about their abilities. I mean, how many times we've worked with employees that, I mean, I'm working with a client right now who's a very senior, very, very creative marketing expert and, you know, can come up with logos and banners and slogans to beat the band. And lo and behold, you know, he's been charged also for the past couple of years with supervising a group of creative artists. Well, the two don't necessarily go hand in hand. And indeed, you know, the amount of turnover in that department has been extraordinary, just because this person wasn't well fit as the kind of supervisor mentor. We recently offloaded all that work of the day-to-day administration of people, and lo and behold, he's shifted to a whole new place, plus the group is a much healthier place with a different supervisor.
Yeah, and, you know, it's really ironic in many respects, because we seem to understand that many times with salespeople.
Yeah.
It seems to be pretty well known that there are certain type of salesperson who's just not to be made the sales manager. I mean, people understand that it isn't necessarily, one doesn't equate the other. And I think it's because sales is so measurable that it's pretty easy to see, mm-hmm. right, whether a person, really is motivated for that, and then how they might change if they are, just supervising people. Of course, there are people who do both, but there certainly are a lot of people who do one and not the other. But then when it moves over into other professions,
yes.
We don't seem to understand that same phenomena, and we take, great teachers and let them become horrible administrators, and, there's all kinds of examples in professions where we don't honor that difference.
Well, the topic we're at hand, Marlis, this big push, the acceleration of things and the idea, whether it be early careers or mid-careers or even those who are moving towards, post the conventional retirement age where they're retiring to something, perhaps wanting to get involved in their community or back into their church or even working part-time for the firm or the industry from which they retired. There does lie a solution in all of this, right? The idea of really reflecting deeply on how you are naturally gifted.
Yes, to really understand just what it is that you, as we say, are motivated to do, what you enjoy doing and what you really feel you do well. And to be able to, analyze that and differentiate it so you can be really precise about it, rather than, so general that it's not useful. And, of course, the classic example always is the individual who said, well, I like to work with people. And we know that there's many, many different kinds of things that you can do with people, teach or counsel or persuade or direct or manage or whatever. And then then what do you want to accomplish with them? I mean, the whole subject matter part of it. And then the circumstances. I mean, do you want to work from a blank sheet? Do you need instructions? Do you need direction? What triggers your work? There's a whole number of factors that go together to form this pattern, as we call it, of motivation. And if you as an individual understand yourself well enough so that you can communicate that to your supervisor in a way that says, this is what I could best do here because this is what I'm really passionate about doing.
Or if, in fact, this is a situation where we've got the great speed up, and there's opportunities, we need five people to now take on this additional task or that additional task, to be able to step up and indeed be able to grab some of those opportunities because they'll fit so naturally with what you're gifted to do.
Right. And to be able to say, I would welcome the opportunity to do this because it really fits with what I, am motivated to do.
Exactly. Well, Marlis, there's no better place than for us to quickly mention to our listeners that obviously the system for identifying motivated abilities is a process that Marlis or myself can guide people through. You can learn more about it by going to simainternational.com. Also, Marlis, your book, Passion and Purpose, which has been out for a number of years. That's kind of a self-guided tour to begin that process, correct?
That's right.
And and quite frankly, for our listeners, that the SEMA International has been around now for 50 years, and over 100,000 people have taken advantage of this assessment process, both as individuals and collectively within organizations.
It's a straightforward kind of analytical process that helps you, discover your own evidence. So it's not a black box. It's not a multiple choice. It's a methodology that gets you in touch with precisely what it is you enjoy doing and feel you do well. And then you can use that insight, for yourself, for your discussions with your management, to make more insightful and accurate decisions with them about the kind of work you take on and volunteer for accept. Especially during this push for productivity.
You bet. Or as you closed with one comment to me recently, you said that we'll probably remember the 21st century as the era of lifelong learning and lifelong working. So we want to add on to that, working with a lot of joy in the process. Marlis, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Okay,
thank you. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.